Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Carol Harnett, and I am the president of the Council for Disability Awareness. We are a nonprofit group whose mission is to educate employees and working adults, along with their employers and financial advisors, about benefits in general, employee benefits that is, and the importance of specifically income protection and how people can ensure their income so that if they need to leave the workplace, most for a temporary period of time, some for a long-term period of time, they can still receive an income stream. But this is open enrollment month for us and for many people that are listening on this show. And what our aim today is to provide people with a real primer, a real step-by-step explanation of how leaving the workplace can operate, particularly from protecting your job, number one, and number two, receiving an income while you're gone. And I'm really pleased to have someone who's a specialist in this area. My guest today is Heather Cook, and Heather is a regional vice president for short-term disability and leave operations at Lincoln Financial Group. And we are happy to say that Lincoln is a member company and a supporter of the Council for Disability Awareness, and we thank them for that. Welcome, Heather. I'm really pleased to have you on the show today.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So, you know, Heather, let me set the stage. Again, everyone is welcome to listen, but our real audience for Heather and I today are indeed employees and working adults. And one of the things that captured my attention in 2017 is the Pew Research Group did a survey. Actually, they simultaneously did two surveys of Americans in general. So this goes beyond working adults. And they essentially asked them what they thought was important for employees to receive and what the most important benefits were that they could receive, and then asked very specific questions around paid leave. And what was most interesting to me is that 85% of Americans believe that working adults are entitled to paid leave for their own serious health condition. And then not 85%, but a slightly smaller percentage believe that people should also receive paid leave for caring for a family member other than a child. And then the lowest category actually was paid leave for what most of us think about, which is maternity care and now even parental leave, caregiving for a child. And so one of the things that I was hoping you could start with is people are hearing more and more about this topic of paid leave, and we're coming off an election where SHRM just predicted, and SHRM, for people who don't know, is the Society for Human Resource Managers, just predicted with the election change and its impact on the House of Representatives, now we will have a large group of women and minorities joining that group, that paid leave is going to become an important topic again. But can you start where leave often started, which was in the 1990s, the passage of the Federal Family Medical Leave Act, and since then state and city and municipality leaves. Can you explain to people at first what is that, and what protection does it offer to people who work, who need to leave the workplace?
Absolutely, yes. Thanks so much for the introduction there. So the Family and Medical Leave Act, which you're right, started back in 1993, is really a means to offer employees 12 weeks of job protection within a 12-month period for very specific qualifying reasons. So if an employee needs to be out of work to care for a new child, take care of someone in their family with a serious health condition, or for their own personal medical condition, then they can do so as long as they work for an employer who is eligible. And basically that means any company with about 50 employees or more within a certain radius. So it's a good benefit that is well known and common, but it doesn't apply to everyone. And so employees really need to know and understand what the eligibility requirements are to get the Family and Medical Leave Act and in what situations it applies. And it's important to note as well that while FMLA is widely available, it is an unpaid leave. So it does protect your job while you're out of work, but it does not guarantee you that income protection piece that so many of us are in need of and looking for when we have to take time off due to a stressful situation. So that's where, as we'll talk about in just a few minutes, where some of the paid components are really important to learn about and to understand as you go through benefits season and preparing possibly for time off in the future.
Thank you so much. And thank you, too, for the clarification. I think some people do forget that your employer has to be of a certain size before some of these things that we're going to be talking about apply, because I think people are familiar now because of all of the coverage in the media. They are more familiar with the concept of leave, but I think the restriction on size gets lost often. Can you also comment, because I know for any employers that might be listening, one thing that's also covered in the FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, is this concept of intermittent leave. Can you explain to people a little bit about what that means and how that works?
Absolutely. So intermittent leave is really beneficial to employees that have to be out of work for either treatment or because they are under a medical condition that just doesn't allow them to perform their job duties. But it's not on a continuous basis. So maybe it's a sporadic condition that flares up every now and again, and they need to be out of work more sporadically, either to attend treatment or to just deal with those flare-ups that pop up every once in a while. So the Family and Medical Leave Act does provide an option for employees to be out of work intermittently in addition to a continuous block of time. And basically what happens then is they would just need to report the time that they are out of work to their employer or to their insurance carrier to make sure that that time is tracked against their overall bank of time. And of course, it has to be supported either by their own medical provider or if they are out caring for a family member, have the appropriate documentation that indicates an intermittent time from work is what's required and necessary for the life event that the person is going through. But it's certainly an option and offers a little bit more flexibility, I think, that employees sometimes need as they're dealing with these circumstances that come up in their lives.
Oh, thank you for explaining that, because I know that people get quite confused about that benefit. And it is a good one, particularly for people going through treatments or having to intermittently take care of a loved one. So maybe we should walk through a little further, because one of our goals today is to help people understand how they can get the most out of leave benefits and benefits like short and long-term disability. So the next place we can potentially go, which because it's existed for a long period of time, is this concept of short-term disability. Can you help employees understand the difference between FMLA, what we just talked about, and a short-term disability plan?
Sure. So FMLA, as I mentioned, is really the job protection portion of your time out of work. So that's guaranteeing that when you're able to return, you do have a job to come back to. But it doesn't provide that income replacement. So short-term disability does. Short-term disability is going to be that benefit that offers you a certain percentage of your pay for a defined number of weeks, as long as you have restrictions from your own medical condition that prevent you from doing the core duties of your job or your occupation. So the two, FMLA and short-term disability, really work hand-in-hand to provide a more holistic benefit to the employee so that they don't have to worry about their job protection or their income while they're out of work. But it's important to note that while there are some states that have mandated disability leave laws in place, most of the time, short-term disability benefits are offered through an employer benefit plan. And so it's very important as you're going through open enrollment to pay attention to what options you have from a disability perspective and whether that's employee or employer funded and really how much you can expect from a percentage of pay and a number of weeks benefit if you have to go out of work due to your own medical condition.
You know, I'm really glad you brought that up, Heather, because I think it's a wonderful thing when employers provide and pay for a short-term disability benefit. But one of the things that I think employees don't realize until they have to use the benefit is that because their employer paid the premiums, paid the cost of the plan, that when they receive the benefit, that benefit is taxable.
Exactly. That's a very
yeah,
good point and something that employees need to be aware of so that they're not caught off guard when that benefit's reduced by taxes.
Absolutely. And for employers who may be listening, this is an important time to talk about the fact that it's important for them to consider if they are going to be that generous and pay all the premium to consider a larger percentage of coverage because, you know, for employers who provide 60% or 66 2/3% of salary, that is still taxable. So it's still a lot less money than the employee is used to receiving when they are out. So we want to make sure people are clear about that. Can you also comment, because I feel like we never talk about how part-time disability or intermittent disability might work under STD. Can you make some comments about that as well, Heather?
Absolutely. It's not a guarantee, so it depends really on your policy whether or not partial disability benefits are available. But a lot of employers do offer it, which I think is a great benefit because what it does is it really incentivizes you to get back to work more quickly. And I think it's great when employers meet employees halfway and say, we don't need you to be fully functional at 100% to come back to work. If it's a day here or there and you can only work part of the work week, that's fine, and we'll work with you to make sure that we ease you back into work in a way that is beneficial to you and really takes care of your health. Employers don't want employees rushing back too soon and putting their own health at risk. So partial disability really allows for the employee and the employer to work together in a manner that is most beneficial and advantageous really to both sides and allows employees to work more of a partial schedule, whether that be 4 hours a day every day or maybe just a couple days a week until their medical condition really allows them to ramp back up to full capacity. And during that time, then employees are reaping the advantage of getting a little bit of income from their actual wages at work, and then disability is picking up a good portion of what's left, sometimes up to 100%, but if not, at least it's a little bit extra so that they've got a little bit more to work with while they're still out on disability in some capacity.
Oh, great. Thank you for that overview. Because, I feel like we never talk about some of the really helpful benefits that a lot of people aren't even aware of that they have under short-term disability. And so since
absolutely,
we're talking
I
about
think
disability,
it's...
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Carol. I was just going to stress the importance then of employees really having that dialogue with their managers and with their HR benefits team when they're ready to come back to work, because you never know, your employer might be really willing to support you in a partial capacity. So if you're not sure, it doesn't hurt to ask. So I would really just encourage that open conversation between employees and their benefits reps when they're ready to go back.
Oh, that's actually a really good point. And then often claim examiners who are working on the claim will sometimes help with that process as well.
Exactly.
And help
absolutely.
Help facilitate that conversation. That's great. Well, since we're talking about disability, we're going to park paid leave just for a second. And why don't we talk about long-term disability? And now for people who are listening who have long-term disability coverage, there's a predetermined length of short-term disability, and there's also what some people call an elimination period, which is a waiting period for benefits, and that exists certainly on short-term disability. It can be 5 days, it can be 7 days, it can be 15 days, it can be a month. You'll hear a term called plan design. It depends on how your employer designed the plan with their carrier, but long-term disability, which happens when people typically have been out of work 3 months or 6 months is pretty traditional, is an extended kind of coverage. So, Heather, can you explain that again for people so they understand maybe some of the differences between short and long-term disability and how they could prepare potentially if they're going to be out long-term for using an LTD benefit?
Yes, absolutely. So once the short-term disability is kind of coming to an end in terms of that defined duration, an employee's case manager will reach out and let them know that they're approaching long-term disability if they have that benefit available to them. And a lot of times this is, you know, chronic conditions that run a little bit longer than 3 to 6 months, or maybe there's a longer recovery time associated with a major surgery or something of that nature, and employees just need a little bit longer of a time to recover. And then other times, employees are on long-term disability for an indefinite period of time and even up until retirement age. So it really is serving in a lot of different ways and meets the needs of a variety of individuals. One thing to note with long-term disability is the percentage of pay that you get may be different than you received in disability, in short-term disability, so it's important to just be aware of what your specific policy entails in terms of the percentage of pay, as well as any applicable offsets that might be taken from that. For instance, if you're required to apply for Social Security benefits, that may be a deduction from your long-term disability pay. So it gets a little bit more complicated just in terms of understanding the benefit when you reach long-term disability, which is why it's really important to do your research ahead of time and know what your policy entails and what you can expect in terms of income replacement. The other thing that is sometimes different in long-term disability is the way that your claim is evaluated. So a lot of times, short-term disability, we're really looking at whether or not you can perform your job as you did it for your employer before you went out of work. But in long-term disability, a lot of times we're looking at whether you can do your occupation as it's understood in the national economy. So taking a step further from your specific job with your specific employer and really broadening that definition of disability to see if there's any other place we could get you back to work in a similar occupation. So the threshold for meeting long-term disability benefits is sometimes a little bit different, and I think that's important for employees to be aware of.
You know, it's very important, and there's and that can sound like a negative, but I always remember when I was involved in claims, one of the examples we would give people to understand is if you're a cashier at a more traditional supermarket, for lack of a better term, where you're not really moving or swiping large, enormous boxes like you would at Costco or any of the other big box container types of stores, those are both classified as cashier jobs, but they may indeed have different physical requirements. And so in long-term disability, that becomes a broader definition that's applied about what an occupation is, and really important for people to understand that. But there are some benefits that really come in addition on LTD related to work, and that is that vocational rehab counselors often get involved in cases like the one I just described, or in cases where someone can't go back to their own occupation at all and may have other skills, what we would call transferable skills, that they could use potentially at a new job or a new occupation. And they're there to help you do that. And that's a very useful benefit that most
people are definitely
not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, vocational resources can be a huge help, and they'll even go as far as helping you with your resume if you've been out of work for a while, and really helping to identify what a comparable occupation might look like and leverage the skills, training, and experience that you have to make sure that it's the right fit in getting you back to work. And a lot of times those vocational experts are really successful, and we hear a lot of success stories about people being able to return to work sooner than they thought, and really finding a job that they enjoy and that fits with their education and experience.
Yes. In fact, a point a lot of people in the U.S. may not know about is there's a group in the U.K. which is similar to the Council for Disability Awareness called the Income Protection Task Force. And they did a study called the Seven Families Project, where they took seven people who did not have disability benefits, and seven carriers, picked up one of the seven people, and they paid them a benefit for a year. But it turned out the most important thing they did for them was they provided them with all the other benefits, including vocational rehab counseling, and five of the seven people were back to work in less than a year. So to me, it's such a great example of how important that benefit is, and we don't pay enough attention to it sometimes. So now I want to move on to the thing that really is in the news, and we've got a good chunk of 10 minutes to talk about it, and that is paid leave. And I think, so now we've walked people through, you have job protection through the Family Medical Leave Act, whether it is at a federal, a state, a city, a municipality level, meaning, by the way, when I say that, for people who work for employees, when you're listening to that, what it means is there sometimes are different levels of protection and generosity under the various kinds of Family Medical Leave Acts. And the most generous one is the one that's always applied to you. So sometimes you might live in a city and a state that has a more generous set of regulations than the federal law does, and the most generous portions always apply to you. So we've got unpaid leave that protects your job. We've got, not everyone has short and long-term disability, but we know that at least a third of people have long-term disability provided by their employer, and at least 40% have short-term disability provided by their employer, meaning that their employer provides either all of the payments for the premiums, the insurance premiums, or pays a portion of them. So now we move to paid leave, and this idea that if people leave the workplace, that they actually receive money. Can you start to walk us through the basics of paid leave and how that works, let's say starting with your own health condition?
Yes, absolutely. So starting with your own health condition and thinking about paid leave, there are a few states across the country that offer a paid leave program and actually mandate that employers that operate in those states provide it to their employees. So states like California, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and most recently New York all have their own paid family leave benefits, and those can be used typically for your own condition or to bond with a child or care for a family member. So it's becoming more and more prevalent. But sticking with your own medical condition for a minute, I think one of the most basic and common forms of paid leave is just using your sick and vacation time. And I think that's often overlooked because we hear a lot about these more glamorous programs that are starting to roll out lately and are getting more and more popular, but they're not yet so prevalent that a lot of employees have access to them. I would say more and more employees do have access to some type of paid sick or vacation time that they can draw from and utilize that to supplement their job protection under FMLA or unpaid state leave. So that's something to not be ignored, and I think employees should feel if they have that paid sick or vacation time that that is definitely an avenue for them to pursue if they need to take time out of work for their own condition and they don't have access to other disability benefits that we just walked through.
You know, I think that's really important to point out. And in fact, it's been a little while since I directly worked with FMLA. Are there still some employers who actually require their employees to take at least some of their paid time off or vacation or sick leave before they access FMLA or while they're accessing FMLA? Is that still a requirement?
It can be. So it's really at the employer's discretion. So, yes, we do still see a lot of employers that require you to utilize some of that PTO time as you go out on FMLA, but it's not required across the board. So some employers elect to just allow employees to hang on to that time should they need it in the future. So it's really at the employee's discretion at that point in time.
So yet another thing people should be asking their employer, particularly during open enrollment, so when they can understand what they have available to them as they're going through this process of choosing their benefits again this fall. So can you now describe... Go ahead.
Sorry, Carol.
No, it's okay.
I was just going to agree with you and say I think the more that folks can be informed and better prepared should they need these type of benefits at some point in the future, it's really important to just understand kind of how they all work together, because a lot of these options that we're talking about today really do overlap with one another and can create a complicated landscape and not one that you really want to be trying to navigate for the first time when that life event is happening. So the more you can think about it ahead of time and plan and ask questions and do your research, the more confident and comfortable people will feel should they have to utilize these benefits in the future.
You just read my mind, because the thing I want to ask you next is I'm thinking, if I don't really know a lot about this and I'm an employee, and let's say I'm pregnant. So, you know, one of the few, you know, planned disabilities that we have. So for people who don't know, the world works in the United States is we do see and classify a maternity leave as a disability. Can you walk people through how do they coordinate all of this? Like, for example, let's say we do have somebody who she's going to go out of work for maternity leave for having a baby. How does she coordinate FMLA, short-term disability, paid leave, and even vacation or sick time?
Absolutely. The first step is really to let your employer know that you need to take time off of work. And from there, they can point you in the right direction to file the appropriate benefits. And some employers manage all of that in-house. So it may be just going to your HR department and filing a formal leave of absence. And you can do that ahead of time. You don't have to wait until you're in the delivery room to go ahead and make that claim request. So you can do it a couple months in advance just for peace of mind. But your employer will be able to point you in that direction, whether it's their internal HR department or whether it's handled by a disability and leave carrier. And typically all it takes is one call to get that process going, and then the case manager that's assigned to help you through that process will reach out and have a conversation and will let you know if you meet the eligibility for the certain benefit. They'll explain how different benefits such as disability and paid parental leave might overlap with one another and what documentation you might need to supply in order to get those benefits approved and going. So the key questions that you would want to ask, I think, in preparing for something like that is, you know, how much of my percentage of pay would I receive if I'm out on these benefits? For how long is my bank of time that I can utilize? And how do I know if I'm eligible? And then finally, what paperwork would I need to submit to get that going? So all it takes is just asking the questions and engaging with your leadership team and your HR business partners, and they're really there to help guide you through the rest of it.
Great, thank you. So let's, as we close down, we've got about 3 minutes left. Can we walk people just briefly through taking a leave for the care of a child or for the care of another loved one where that is covered?
Absolutely. So more and more we're seeing that that family members are taking time off, not for themselves, but to care for a new child or for a family member. And a lot of this now is being covered not just by FMLA and state leaves, which we know are unpaid, but a lot of it now is actually covered under some type of paid family leave program. So it's important to also ask the question of whether or not your employer has benefits that would cover you to take that time off. And the process is actually very similar to filing a claim or a leave for your own condition. And it's the first step is really making sure that your employer is aware, determining whether you meet the eligibility and have the benefits available to you, and then submitting whatever paperwork is required, which is typically a birth certification or a medical certification form to just document that that family member is in need of care or that you recently had a child to bond with. So it's not a whole lot of a burden of proof on you. It's really more so just a couple of forms that need to be filled out and confirming the dates that you'll be out of work with your employer. And the process really can go pretty smoothly from there.
And I think given the time, I have like one last question because people, we've talked a lot about how you can prepare ahead of time for filing a claim. But what happens to someone who perhaps has an accident, something that they haven't planned? And let's say it's not even a minor accident. It's a bigger accident and they wind up, you know, hospitalized for a short period of time. How did they go about, or can someone who is a relative or a friend start a claim process for them?
Sure. Life happens, certainly, and there are going to be situations that come up that we don't expect. So employers and insurance companies really try to make it as easy as possible for that person to get the help they need when they need it. And anybody can file a claim on your behalf. A lot of times, even your employer can do it or a family member. So it's really just making sure that you have that number to call, and they can call in that claim or leave request on your behalf and get the process moving. And then your claim case manager, whether that be at your employer or with your insurance company, will do all of the heavy lifting. They'll make the phone calls to the hospital. They will confirm your admission. They will get any medical records that might be necessary. So it is possible if you're incapacitated or just in a really severe accident, not able to advocate for yourself, that all of this can continue to move on and get the benefits that you need through other people helping you and being those advocates on your behalf.
Great. Thank you so much, Heather. I really appreciate that. So at this point, I want to say thank you to Heather Cook for being an expert for us, and hopefully you've learned a great deal to take away from this. Thank you so much, Heather.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Enjoy your day, everyone.